What's up, everybody? It's Roman Gennaro with Empire Sports Talk, and I am back. I'm using a different camera today, so if I look off to the side at any point, that's where my notes are. We have a lot to cover today. Let's get to it. First things first, I want to congratulate the Florida Panthers on surviving an epic Stanley Cup final with the Edmonton Oilers and somehow finding a way to win Game 7 despite blowing a 3-0 lead to get to that Game 7. Everything pointed to the fact that Edmonton was going to take care of business in Sunrise, Florida. And somehow, against all odds, the Florida Panthers pulled it off at home to avoid the embarrassing reality of becoming the second team ever to blow a 3-0 lead in the Stanley Cup Final. And they won their first cup in franchise history. I called my dad when it was over and I said, "You'll never guess, Florida just won the Stanley Cup. The Florida Panthers." And yes, I know the Tampa Bay Lightning have won multiple, but the Florida Panthers are in the Miami area, and whoever thought that Florida and hockey needed to happen probably never guessed that there would be four total Stanley Cups now in the state of Florida. But I watched the trophy presentation, because the NHL trophy presentation is one of the best in sports, if not the best. It's definitely the best in sports, giving the cup to every player, letting them do a lap around the ice, passing it to GMs and coaches and the team picture and the whole thing. And Connor McDavid actually won the Conn Smythe for the playoff MVP, which very rarely goes to a player on the losing team, but he definitely earned it. I kept hearing in interviews that there's a difference between a team, a group of guys, and family. And a lot of teams will say they're a family and say they're brothers and all this sort of stuff. And one player even said, "I hate when people say, oh, it's a great group of guys." He said, "Because that's so surface level." He said, and everybody that spoke, that I heard speak about the Panthers, said, this is a family. And the head coach said, "I came to coach here because it was different." And everybody on the telecast, from announcers to whoever, said, this Florida team was different. And they got so close a year ago. They lost the cup a year ago, and it just seemed inevitable that this was going to happen. So congratulations to the Florida Panthers on winning their first Stanley Cup in franchise history, and to pull it off in such crazy circumstances where it looked like they were dead in the water, where in games 4, 5, and 6 it looked like a different team. It looked like they were just being outclassed, and to come all the way back and say we're not going out like this and finish it off was something special. I want to give a congratulations also to the Tennessee Volunteers for winning the College World Series in a thrilling best of three matchup with the Texas A&M Aggies. The interesting part there was A&M's coach Jim Schlossnagel was asked about, because there were rumors that he was going to take another job, and obviously he'd heard that, and it frustrated him to the point where on the podium he said, "I took the Texas A&M job so I'd never have to take another job again." And then 24 hours later he was hired by the Texas Longhorns to be their head coach. So not only was he not telling the truth when he said, "I took this job so I'd never have to take another one again," but he spurned him for a rival. Now, you could look at it as he was telling the truth when he said, "I took this job so I could never take another one again," if his plan all along was to go to Texas. He said, if I take the A&M job, it'll give me the Texas job, and then I'll have to never take one again. I don't know. But if you know in your mind that you're about to leave to take another job, which you know he knew, because he took it the next day, even in the pain of losing the College World Series, if you know you're about to leave, don't make statements and promises about not leaving. Like, Jim Schlossnagel could not have known more. It was the next day. So I found that humorous, but also I would definitely be annoyed if I was an A&M alum or a player or a student. I'd be annoyed. To get to the meat of the episode, the NBA draft was this week, and whether you believe it was a weak draft or whatever, it did make some history. First, I want to acknowledge, and if I butcher some of these names during this podcast and anyone happens to hear it, I apologize. The first overall pick was Zachary Richard, who was drafted first overall by the Atlanta Hawks from France. Second overall was Alex Sarr, also from France, drafted by the Washington Wizards. Third overall was Reed Sheppard, who went to the Houston Rockets. This draft did make history because France had three players drafted in the top six. And it was Richard at number one, Sarr at number two, and Tijan Selain going six to the Charlotte Hornets. And France in this draft became the first country outside of the United States in NBA draft history to have three players drafted in the top 10. Congratulations to those three guys for making history for their country. You can attribute it to all the noise that Wimby made a year ago, making people pay attention to France, making NBA executives pay attention to what's going on over in France. You could attribute it to Rudy Gobert coming over and winning multiple Defensive Player of the Years, and some people said that he robbed countryman Victor Wembanyama so that could have had an influence. You could say just the general fact that the international players seem to be dominating the NBA right now with Luka and Jokic and Giannis. You could say that it seems like the international players are dominating right now. However you want to look at it, France becomes the first country outside of the U.S. to have three top 10 picks in the NBA draft. And speaking of Rudy Gobert, there were two main stories in this draft. It is now a two-day event. You could say it was one of the weaker drafts, but there were two main stories in this draft. One being that, speaking of Rudy Gobert, being that the resounding winner of the draft seemed to be the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Minnesota Timberwolves were obviously one of the best teams in the NBA a year ago. They came just short of the NBA Finals, losing to the Dallas Mavericks in the Western Conference Finals. It seemed like they ran out of gas. It seemed like they built a team to beat Denver. And when they did, it took everything out of them, and they didn't have much left for a Dallas team that on paper wasn't as good. It wasn't nearly as deep as Minnesota. It seemed that in that series, Anthony Edwards was having to shoulder almost all of the scoring load, which probably is what attributed to some of his weaker shooting games. Now, after this draft, Minnesota gets a resounding win because they get Rob Dillingham at 8 in a trade with the San Antonio Spurs, and then at 27 they get Terrence Shannon Jr. Both of these players are insane playmakers, great shot creators, offensive threats. Now you pair both of them with Anthony Edwards, which potentially makes Minnesota a three-headed offensive monster. And then you add in the defense that was the best in the NBA this year. You add in multiple Defensive Player of the Year, Rudy Gobert. You add in Karl-Anthony Towns, who can be an offensive force when he wants to. And you add in Naz Reid had some pretty spectacular games in the playoffs. So suddenly, with these two picks in the first round, Minnesota won the draft going away. And you could because there was arguments well before the draft, like at the beginning of the year, basically, that Rob Dillingham could have been the first overall pick. Obviously, that didn't happen. He might have had a little bit of a down year, but there was a moment in time where people were saying Rob Dillingham is going to be the number one overall pick. So you get a guy who has top pick talent. You get another insane scorer, and I really look forward to seeing how those two shot creators pair with Anthony Edwards as he continues his climb to potentially being the face of the NBA. And the other story, no surprise here, is that the worst-kept secret in the NBA is now a reality. Bronny James was drafted 55 overall to the Los Angeles Lakers. But before I get there, arguably the more important piece that LA got in the draft was their first round pick at number 17. They drafted Tennessee's Dalton Knecht, who is one of the better offensive players in this draft, and gives them the shooting that the Lakers desperately need. So let's not gloss over the Dalton Knecht of it all. But the story was that with pick 55, they selected Bronny James. And so now the thing we've been hearing about for years and years and years is coming to fruition. LeBron James will play with his son in the NBA on the Lakers. And I've been pretty vocal about how I don't think Bronny should have declared for the draft. I think he should have entered the transfer portal, gone to a school outside of California, and continued to improve his game. I think he needed to get out of the shadow of his father, and now he couldn't be more in it. With his realistically 6'1 frame, we found out at the draft that he was not actually 6'4 as he was listed at USC. But I think Bronny is a good player. I just think USC was not a good fit. I think there were other things going on. He had his health situation that marred his early time at college. I think there was a lot of talk about him. I think it would have benefited him to get out of California. And I think he'll be a good player in the NBA. I think it'll take time. I don't see him having a significant contribution to the Lakers this year. But regardless of what you think about if they should have drafted him or if he should have been drafted at all or whatever. And I know I give LeBron a lot of crap on this show. I have Michael Jordan right behind me, and just to the right of the camera, I've got Kobe Bryant. I know I give LeBron James a lot of crap on this show, and I know he said a lot of things that prompt a lot of memes and videos about LeBron likes to lie and all this sort of stuff, and I'm not going to talk about that. If you want to see those videos, they're pretty funny. They're out there. But I've witnessed LeBron his whole career, and there are two things LeBron has said for a very long time that remain true. He said his two main goals for his career. He said he wanted to bring a title to his hometown of Cleveland. He did that. And he said, as soon as he realized that it could be a reality, he said, I want to play in the NBA with my son. And now he's doing that, and I think that is great. I think that is something very exciting to watch, because who wouldn't want to play on the same team as their son? We've seen it in the NHL. We've seen it in Major League Baseball with the Griffies. And now we get to see it in the NBA with LeBron James and Bronny James. It was announced that Bronny James would wear James Jr. on the back of his jersey, as well as the number 9. And I have a funny story about that, but before that, I want to put it into perspective. We hear, you know, obviously Bronny's a teenager. Obviously LeBron's been in the league for 20-plus years, so the math is there. But sometimes you have to recontextualize and put something into a different perspective to really grasp it. And we know LeBron's been dominating the NBA for a long time, but I saw this graphic in relation to that and Bronny being in the NBA now that put LeBron's prolonged dominance into perspective, and it's this. And I'll put it up on the screen for you as well. Pardon me while I look to the side while I read it off for you. Bronny James was born a month before the 2004-2005 season. That's LeBron in year two. LeBron went on to average 27 points per game, 7 rebounds, and 7 assists that season. The season before his son joined him in the NBA, LeBron averaged 26, 7, and 8. So that puts into perspective that LeBron going into year two, how long he's been dominating. He's literally been dominating the NBA for his son's entire life, and now his son is going to take the court next to him. And now the funny story. It was announced yesterday via the Lakers that I appreciate that teams are coming out very quickly with their draft pick jersey numbers, because that's something as a sports fan that I very quickly, when I hear that the team's got a new player, that a minor league prospect's being called up, I'm always like, what number are they wearing? I don't know why, it matters to me. So I appreciate that the Lakers announced this really quick. The Lakers announced that Bronny James would be wearing the number 9 for the Lakers next season. And this is humorous for multiple reasons. One, because we thought maybe he'd wear the number 0, because he said before that his favorite player of all time was Russell Westbrook. And then he went to USC and wore the number 6, because you're allowed to wear the number 6 now in college basketball. He wore the number 6, seemingly in honor of his father's time in Miami. But he couldn't wear the number 6 in the NBA, so it was kind of assumed that he would wear the number 0. All of the photoshops of him on the Lakers have the number 0. But no, he's going to be wearing the number 9. And the reason I find this extra funny is because there was a story a long time ago about LeBron James when he was first coming out of high school to the NBA. that his agents and advisors wanted him to wear the number 9. Wanted LeBron to wear the number 9 to start to in the NBA. And this was because LeBron obviously wore 23 in high school and because he loved Michael Jordan and he wanted to wear it in the pros. And his management was like, hey, no, number 23 is synonymous with Michael Jordan. Like, it wasn't a popular number when he showed up. It was kind of a weird number, an awkward number when he showed up. It wasn't the statement it is now. And he turned it into what it is now. And so you should do the same thing. You should wear the number 9 and make it your own. Now, the ironic part of that is that Michael Jordan wore the number 9 in the Olympics with the Dream Team, but whatever. LeBron's management told him, you should wear the number 9 to stand apart, to make it yours. And LeBron said, no, I'm going to wear 23 because that's the number I wore. It's the number Michael Jordan wore. I'm trying to be better than him. I'm going to wear the number 23. So I find it really funny and quite ironic that Bronny is now going to be wearing number 9. The original number that LeBron's team suggested he wear to stand apart. Was this done on purpose by LeBron James and his camp? I don't know, but it is funny. It is hilariously ironic to me. For the rest of the time, I want to talk about baseball. I know I usually touch on baseball at least once an episode. I try not to get too baseball heavy in a single episode because a lot of people... There's a lot of sports fans that baseball is their least favorite, so we don't talk about them as much. But there's a lot to talk about this week in baseball. Trevor Bauer, who's been out of Major League Baseball since 2021, has alluded to the fact that he might have no other choice but to sue Major League Baseball. And this is because in 2021, he was accused of assault by a former partner. And Major League Baseball suspended him while they investigated, and he missed quite a lengthy suspension. I think it was north of 200 games or something like that. Cut to earlier this year or late last year, I don't know exactly. But the investigation found that not only was there no evidence that these allegations were true, but they found proof that the accuser lied and made up the story. And she has since been charged to that fact. And somehow still, the MLB has seemingly closed its doors to Trevor Bauer. Yes, he's a big personality. Yes, he rubs some people the wrong way. But at the time that Trevor Bauer was suspended for accusations that have now been found to be untrue, he was at the top of his game. He was one of the best pitchers in baseball, a former number one overall pick. And he never stopped saying, hey, I didn't do this. And then once those charges were dropped, he initially didn't hold any ill will. He said, I will do anything to get back. I will pitch for anyone. I will come out of the bullpen. I don't care. Just give me a chance. And there was even a report at one point that he had a tryout with the Houston Astros, who at the time, earlier this season, needed a lot of pitching because their pitching was injured. And Houston very quickly came out and said, that's not happening. And several other GMs were very vocal about, no matter what, they're not signing Trevor Bauer. And again, this was after charges were found to be untrue. Trevor Bauer, who's been pitching overseas for the last 2 years, and well, might I add, he was an all-star a year ago in Japan, and this year in the Mexican League, he's dominating with a 2.37 ERA, and he's averaging 12.3 strikeouts per 9 innings. And so at 33 years old, he is still in top form, it appears, and just asking for a chance. It doesn't seem like anyone is going to give him one. He made this statement on Instagram. He said, I'd really prefer not to go this route, but if I continue being kept out of baseball as I currently am, I may have no other choice. Let's hope it doesn't come to that, and I'm allowed to return to my career that was taken away from me over provably false allegations that never held any merit to begin with. So Trevor Bauer continues to hold his innocence. He continues to say, hey, those weren't true. There's proof to that fact. And Major League Baseball has appeared to close its doors. I will say, he has not taken action yet. He's just saying, this might have to happen. I don't think there's any winners in that situation, because you're basically blackmailing Major League Baseball to say, sign me, or you're going to be sued for, I think the thing said billions. But the problem is, and we've seen this in other sports, the problem is, once you theoretically declare war on the league that you used to play for, it's over. Because even if you win, or even if this ultimatum gets you signed, there's going to be players and coaches that look at you with disdain and say, you're only here because you caused a stir. You're only here because of this reason or that reason. Or they don't flinch. You sue and you become public enemy number one of the league you once loved. And whenever that happens, as I said, we've seen it before. That's pretty much it. We've seen it with Colin Kaepernick and Antonio Brown in the NFL. Once you give an ultimatum and take action, it's over. And so Trevor Bauer is a good pitcher still, obviously, by the numbers he's putting up in Japan and the Mexican League. Obviously, there's a lot of teams, a lot of contending teams, that could use pitching. The Braves being one, the Astros, who are suddenly hot and gaining ground, another. You can never have enough pitching. The Mariners, the Guardians, these are teams that could use pitching. He even said later in that statement, he said, if you would sit down with me and talk to me, you'd understand. You would know what was going on. I would tell you. Even while he's making this threat, this ultimatum, he's pleading with Major League Baseball, please give me a chance. So he doesn't want to do this. There were times with Colin Kaepernick that it seemed like he wanted to burn the NFL to the ground. And with Antonio Brown, it seemed like he wanted to kick butt and take names in the NFL. It doesn't seem like Trevor Bauer wants to do this. All right, the next thing is something I've wanted to talk about for a few weeks now. It hasn't worked out that way, but today is one of the days, and I want to talk about it. It's Skeens Day. Paul Skeens. In fact, as we speak, recording this on Saturday at 5:22 Eastern Time, Paul Skeens is on the mound in Atlanta against the Atlanta Braves. But we're not going to talk about that start because we're not looking at that score. We're going to talk about what he's done before that. He's having an insanely good rookie season. Some have even said he's the best pitcher in baseball already. Through his first 8 starts, he's 4-0 with a 2.14 ERA and 61 strikeouts. After his first start on May 11th against the Cubs, he already had, I think, 9 of the 10 fastest pitches recorded in Major League Baseball this season. After one start. And his last pitch of his June 23rd start against Tampa, which was his last start prior to today, the last pitch he threw was clocked at 102, his fastest pitch of the season. Paul Skeens is taking Major League Baseball by storm, and that doesn't happen that often in Major League Baseball where everybody stops and looks over at one person. The last time it happened was when Aaron Judge was chasing and subsequently broke Roger Maris's AL home run record by hitting 62. Everybody stopped and watched as he got close. The time before that was probably in 2016 when the Cubs won the World Series. Everybody stops and watches Paul Skeens. The league has a name for it. It's Skeens Day. And today is Skeens Day. And that's not just something that Pirates fans say. I know, I was there. They love him. And it's funny because about a month ago when I was in Pittsburgh, I missed Skeens against the Braves by a day. And yet here we are today, Skeens against the Braves in Atlanta. But even though he wasn't pitching the weekend I was there, there was an energy with the Pirates. And these people love him. But the league has taken notice. The headlines on SportsCenter would say, last night was Skeens Day, let's see how it went, as the lead story. the league is taking notice of Paul Skeens. And he's given us something to notice. And he's brought a spark to Pittsburgh. Because through the first 30 games or so, Pittsburgh was probably the best team in baseball. They got off to a really hot start, and then they faded down the stretch. And then here comes Paul Skeens, who's done what he's done in the first 8 starts. The Pirates are 6-2 in his 8 starts. We've seen that happen before. We've seen times when a certain pitcher will either get the best or get the worst from their team every time they start. We've seen it on both sides. And I have 2 examples just from the Braves. I think it was 2011 or 2012. Chris Medlin was having his best season for the Braves, and I think the Braves won something like 19 straight games that Medlin started, 19, 20 straight games that Medlin started. And then a couple years later, in 2015, Shelby Miller had what can only be described as, personally, a Cy Young caliber season based on his performance. But if you look at his stats, you'd say, how is that possible? Because the Braves, who were rebuilding, let's say, at the time, still 3 years away from their first playoff appearance in several years, Shelby Miller had a 3.02 ERA in 2015, but his win-loss record was 9-17. Because I think they looked at it, and at least half of Shelby Miller's starts with the Braves, one or fewer runs of run support. And I don't care what sport you play. If you can't score, you can't win. So Shelby Miller in 2015 had a 3.02 ERA, but was 9-17, because a rebuilding Braves team at the time, for whatever reason, every time he came up on the mound, they couldn't score. And it wasn't that like the Braves were absolutely terrible, because there were weeks where they would win the 4 games in between Shelby Miller's starts and lose both of the starts on either end because they couldn't score. Sometimes it happens that way, for good or for bad. And for the Pirates this year, luckily for Skeens, it seems to be going good. As I said, they are 6-2 in his 8 starts this season, not counting today, obviously, because we don't know yet. And not only that, but the Pirates are building. They've struggled to develop pitching for a while now. And not only Skeens, but they have Mitch Keller and Jared Jones, who are doing really well. So they're building quite a three-headed monster at the top of that rotation, hopefully for years to come. But their offense seems to be the problem this year. And they are 24th in Major League Baseball in runs scored. They're averaging 4 runs a game, 4 runs exactly a game. But in the 8 games that Paul Skeens has been on the mound, they've averaged 6.5 runs a game. So just Skeens' mere presence is electrifying that team, electrifying that lineup. And they're starting to play better baseball because Brian Reynolds, coming into today, is on a 24-game hit streak, knock on wood, and he already has broken the club record for longest hit streak. That previously belonged to Key Brian Hayes, who had a 19-game hit streak in 2020. He's been the best player for Pittsburgh for a while now. He's been subject of trade talks near the deadline, but he likes Pittsburgh. He wants to stay. And after being there and seeing the environment, I understand. And then the other thing is, as I mentioned, Paul Skeens is great. Paul Skeens is the headline. But another rookie, Jared Jones, has also been stealing headlines. And Mitch Keller, their ace, who's been their opening day starter for the last 3 years, is among the league leaders in wins this season. And I think they have quite a three-headed monster at the top of their rotation. If they can continue to add to that, if they can bring top pick Henry Davis along the way he's supposed to be, if they can get consistency from the offense, I think the Pirates can be formidable in the future. Outside of the division-leading Brewers, the NL Central's pretty tight. As of right now, the second-place Cardinals hold on to the last NL wildcard spot, but the Reds, Pirates, and Cubs are all hovering around 500 and could make noise if they can find their way. And right now, Pittsburgh seems to be playing really, really well, thanks to what Skeens is doing and the rest of that team. I look forward to seeing what the Pirates can build in the future behind Paul Skeens. There's no doubt in my mind that next season, Mitch Keller might be hard-pressed to make that opening day start with Paul Skeens in the rotation. Last thing I want to touch on is, at least all season to this point, the best team in the American League, and that's the New York Yankees, is that at this point we are witnessing something that might be a curse for the Yankees. If you've paid attention to our social media, you've seen that every Sunday evening this season, I've put up my power rankings for Major League Baseball. And for the most part, pretty much every ranking, the Yankees are either number one or number two, depending on how the Phillies did that week. And they've been consistently the best team in the American League all season. And that's even without Gerrit Cole for most of the year until a week ago. But then somebody pointed out to me on social media a disturbing trend with the New York Yankees dating back to 2022. In 2022, the Yankees started the season 61-23, the league's best record. After that point, they finished 38-40. The next year, they started 36-25, finished 46-55. And this year so far, they've started 50-22, and since then, going into today, are 3-9. Is it a trend? Is it they just haven't found that final piece to get them over the top? Is it injuries? Who knows? But it was pointed out to me, quite an interesting trend for one of the proudest teams and biggest brands in all sports. The Yankee pinstripes might not be finishers anymore like they used to be. You gotta finish. And the last 3 years, the Yankees haven't finished. But if Gerrit Cole can get into mid-season form, as it is now mid-season for the team, even though he just started, if Aaron Judge can stay healthy, if Stanton can stay healthy, I think this is just a blip. They've gotten really good pitching out of Luis Gil. They've gotten really good pitching out of Carlos Rondon. There was an interesting moment outside of the last couple of starts, but there was an interesting moment in his last start with Aaron Boone where he was struggling to get out of the fifth inning, and there was one out in the fifth inning, and Aaron Boone came out to get him, and they had a conversation at on the mound, and what was essentially said was Carlos Rondon begging Aaron Boone to stay in the game and finish the fifth, and he had two more outs to get. And that happens a lot. You make a case to stay in a lot, but usually when the manager comes out there, you're gone. And Aaron Boone let Rondon stay in. Rondon got the next two guys to fly out, and he made it out of the inning. And I just thought it was a very interesting moment of you got to listen to your players when they tell you they got it. They got it. And Aaron Boone listened to his players, and they got out of the inning, and I believe they won the game. I don't remember off the top of my head, but I believe they won the game. I think that was against the Mets. But we have to keep an eye out on that, as the Yankees are, at least at this point, continuing an interesting trend that we've seen the last 3 years, where they finish under 500 after starting hot. So that's something to keep an eye out on. That's all I have for you on this episode of Empire Sports Talk. I am your host, Roman Gennaro. Check us out on YouTube and social media. Subscribe to the channel. Like this video for more content like this. We have some cool things coming up. I'll have more news on that as it gets closer, and we have more Xbox exposés coming and that kind of thing. So subscribe to that channel, hit that notification bell so you know when new content comes out, and we'll see you on the next one.